You're listening to ESPN 100.3 FM, KLRZ, La Rose, New Orleans, and the River Region.
It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Hello, sports fans.
Well, hello there.
Local sports, national sports. The GCAT has got you covered.
Oh, you made a wise choice, my friend.
Time to tee it up and let it fly. It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Check it out, John. Hour number three of the Sports Hangover off and running. It is Wednesday. We'll officially welcome you to the midway point of your work week here shortly. 800-998-1003 is the way to chime into the conversation. Buddy, we'll take your phone calls back over in the LaRose studios. An absolutely gorgeous day. Hopefully you're enjoying it. If not, get off of work a little early. You got something to go do. Get home, take a walk, walk the dog, walk the neighborhood. Absolutely enjoy it before it gets too hot. And enjoy, you know, just the days that you got, man. That's what's important.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is?
It's hump day.
Hump day! I know you can hear me. Let's get stupid.
Today's more than what that camera Wednesday hump day is. What it is.
Indeed, it is. That is Broncos head coach Sean Payton, Caleb the Camel. And, of course, Shock G in the Digital Underground. Gus Kattengill with you at GCAT_17. The TuneIn radio app. Absolutely free. It's the way to listen to us. North Shore. Two states away. Up in the air. The Graf can listen. As the Pels are on their way to Philadelphia. If you got an internet or Wi-Fi connection, you can listen to it. Is that easy? It's really cool. 800-998-1003, as we've been talking Pels in their 41-point win. What a shame Jason Tatum didn't get a call at the end of the game. They're complaining in Boston. They're only number one in offense, number two in defense. They'll be just fine. They'll be just fine. Nuggets, thanks for nothing. Could not beat the Suns. They did come back down 20-plus, but lose in overtime. Durantula, 35 points, 8 coming in overtime. Mavericks, they get another triple-double from Luka, but they've lost 4 of 5 here as well. But the Pelicans took care of their business, and that was the key. And in case you missed it, shame on you, for starters. But on the Pelicans Radio Network, this is what it sounded like.
Trey, bad pass. Olynyk deflected it, but there's McCollum. Right place, right time. Go. Little crossover with three. Drives in right corner. Herb for three at the shot clock buzzer. Nothing but net. Herb now with his third three. He's got 11 points.
A little bit of chicken salad on that one. Had a couple of deflections, and you wind up with an open three.
Brandon, guarded by Noir. Crossed him over.
Oh, drives yes, sir.
It. Oh,
my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Brandon Ingram just threw it down.
All on his head. Take it. Take it.
An absolute throwdown for B.I. as Clark just missed a layup. That was angry Ingram.
He cocked that one back with some malice.
Zion and Barrett bounce me to Trey. Left wing three. Rainbow and down.
Wait. Why is that the guy you're doubling off?
Again, that's a them problem.
That can't be the guy you're doubling off.
Lucky number 7 for Kenneth Murphy III. 14 on the shot clock. Inbound to Herb, who's got a career-high time 5 threes. Z to Trey. Left wing three.
Online and 8 threes for Murphy.
Kenneth the III cooking.
Murphy, left corner.
Oh,
back step
up.
Back for three.
Oh, and yes.
And back in again.
Trey Murphy feeling every bit of it.
He's
9 of 11.
The 9 is a season high. He is one below his career high with 10. Ball on the deck. Jonas has it.
Jonas is the only guy down at the rebound. Somebody's got to help him out a little
now,
bit.
Now,
alley-oop! Alvarado to Z. Coming right side and a two-hand throwdown.
Go get it, big fella.
He did. Oh. Barrett blocked at the rim by Zion Williamson. Up the floor. Z. Kick it left corner. Murphy.
Oh, yes, sir.
To
yes,
tie.
Sir. Yes, sir.
His career
yes,
high.
Yes, sir. Smoke it.
10 made threes for Murphy. 21 all told for the Pels. It is a blowout in Toronto.
Somebody turn the hose on Trey Murphy.
Pels getting it done. 41-point win. Trey Murphy, 10 three-pointers. 24 overall by the team. Go down from beyond the arc. Coach Green, why so many threes?
Our goal is to try to shoot 40 threes, catch and shoot threes. But, you know, there's some games where guys are closing out hard to us, and now it's drive, touch the paint, rim decisions, and there may be another kick out from there. And we did that several times as well. But when we're open for those shots, those guys work too hard not to take them.
It's interesting, Zion and the rest of the starters, not a single starter had double digits. Brandon Ingram just 12 points. Jonas Valanciunas 10 points, 10 rebounds in 20 minutes. Herb Jones had 17. Oh, by the way, he had 5 threes. He continues his unbelievable shooting percentage since the All-Star break, since January 1st. Herb Jones is your best three-point shooter in the NBA. Like, not on the Pels, like in the NBA. C.J. McCollum, 11 points. Not a starter. Had 20 points, and they won by 41. Zion had 16 points, 9 assists, 8 rebounds in 26 minutes. If he plays 30, he probably gets a triple-double. And point Zion continuing to work. He was asked why it works.
This team, we have a lot of shooters. And, you know, I attack the basket really well. So, you know, when teams try to load up against me, I got options. And, I mean, they've been knocking down shots. And Herb, especially with the corner three, actually, no matter what he got on the court now, he's been knocking them down. And then Trey is, come on, Trey's Trey.
Yeah. Speaking of that, he likes points.
Really just, he's such a paint presence, and I have an ability to shoot the ball at a high level. And so when you mix those two together, you kind of have to pick your poison as a defense on whether or not you want to help on his drives and leave me open or don't help and then take away my threes and then, you know, you're left with a layup. So, you know, it's a tough little game you have to play. But I'm really getting to enjoy this.
Yeah, I think a lot of us are here as well. It'd be fantastic. We'll agree on Trey and Herb.
Trey was fantastic. When he's shooting the ball like that, we're a hard team to beat. And he knows that. It's good to see him start to make some shots because it opens up the lane for Brandon, for CJ, for Zion, for the rest of our group when he's making shots like he is tonight. And then Herb Jones, same thing. And, you know, he works diligently at his shooting and other components of his game. It's good to see him play with the confidence that he's playing with.
I agree. And I think one of the things, too, is when you hear Zion, those two players, he values.
From my perspective, confidence. Every shot he took not only looked like it was going in, but he felt like they were going in. And when you have somebody that's on fire like that, you got to find them. And when they started blitzing me, I tell Trey every time, I'm going to find you. Just find open spot. And then five, I said it before, this man is not first team all defense. I don't know what requirements you need to make it at that point. But those two dudes, man, they're great teammates. And the world got to see another example of them being great tonight.
Yeah, and again, that's one of those things that you see that is it's absolutely helped. And, man, again, when you have those two players playing the way they are, it's pretty remarkable. It's pretty remarkable to see that. One of the other things that Z said that is getting a ton of attention.
I got to do my part and make the All-Star game. If I'm in the All-Star game, I'll do the dunk contest. But if I'm not, not doing it.
I brought that up just because just now on NBA Today, they're going over the Celtics game in which they blew a lead, got outscored something like 39-11 or something, Cavaliers last night. But in the bottom right-hand corner, did you see if you're watching? Bottom right-hand corner, little graphic, there's Zion smiling. Can Zion save the dunk contest? Pretty remarkable how that's gone, huh? I'm telling you, winning solves a lot of things. Team playing well, him smiling at the podium, and now he's the savior of the dunk competition. And that's something. Savior. I love it, I love it. Look, you will take it. I played this a little bit earlier as well. One of the things that Willie Green how to keep his team focused on it. And look, the maturation of this team, I think it's unfolding before our very eyes. They came out yesterday looking to pick up that win and stomp on a team that they know they're better than. And they made a bit of a run. Got just over 20. I don't think they got under 20. They might have. I don't know. Graf was nervous. Pels had like a 30-point lead. It got down to 21-22. Here come the Raptors. And then they settled it down. Coach Green on how to keep a team focused during blowouts like this.
My discussion in the huddle was win your minutes. Each individual that touches the floor, we have a standard that we want to play in. You never know when your number is going to be called, so no matter the score, we continue to play together, play hard, take quality shots. It starts with our defense, as I mentioned earlier, but, you know, extremely proud of this group. It's a great step in the right direction and good to get a win to start our road trip.
Yeah, no doubt. One final thing that I want to get to, and we'll get to Jimmy here. Just 20 games remain. That's it. What's the challenge from here on out, he was asked?
The challenge for us is always looking ourselves in the mirror and going out with the mentality that we want to be dominant every game. We want to execute. We want to execute on both ends of the floor. And every game, we should have an opportunity to win, period. And that's going to be the challenge going down the stretch. It's going to be, as you guys can see, some of these games are going to be exciting. There's teams fighting for positioning. And we're one of them. So each game that we play, we're going to have to have a mentality that we want to execute on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, like I said, I like it. Philly coming up at 6 o'clock on Friday. I'll be over at Reds in the Tulane area over there on Maple. I hadn't been there in a little bit, so I'm going to – I don't know. Graf, can I have your seat? Can I have the bar over there, or you put me in front of a TV? I don't know. And Sunday I'll be over at Mid-City Yacht Club with some Pels goodies, so I literally have boxes of Pels stuff. So I'd show up. I'm just saying. I don't know what I'm going to bring you. City Edition T-shirt. I really love the koozies, the sweater koozies I had. They gave away. It was kind of like the Christmas sweater. Got a bunch of those. I actually have a box full of those chains, those lighted massive pale skeleton chains. Might have a few of those as well. Anyway, Jimmy, we'll come to you right out of the break, sir, and bring in Jim Eichenhofer's The Sports Hangover in ESPN New Orleans.
Great spot. We're in a great spot. The goal for us now is to keep that momentum and be consistent with it.
We'll speak with Jim Eichenhofer here in a quick second. Buddy, go ahead and get Jim online for me, and we'll go with Jimmy until we can get Eichenhofer on. What you got, Jimmy?
Hey, Gus. Yeah, man, look, I love hearing these Zion clips. He's of the big three stars we've had land in our lap. Zion's obviously the most lovable, more so than Davis, obviously. Chris Paul one time, it was a love-hate scenario, but there's something about his personality I really like, and it's crazy to me. Like you said, winning cures everything. It has. I mean, this is the best team, Gus, I told you this before, since the Chris Paul, Peja, David West, Chandler team, talent-wise, okay? We stay healthy. It's as much talent as that team or more. And it's laughable to me when fans, I saw people say this on Pelicans fans, say this on social media and say Willie Green needs to be fired. Like, he lost a 12-point lead in a game or something. And that's going to happen. These are the most elite players and the least in most elite league.
Celtics
in the world.
Blew a 39-11 run in the fourth quarter and lost to the Cavs yesterday. So yeah,
exactly, it happens, and they want Willie's head on a platter. But let's be honest here: before we had Willie Green, we've had also ran guys who were on blood pressure pills, ready to retire. Alvin Gentry, Paul Silas. Yeah, they did good at one time, but they didn't have much results here. And they were, like, on the back end. They were guys that, like, nobody else wanted a job. They didn't want to go retire and be with their wife, and they just came and got a job down here. They made good money, but Willie Green's different. He's young. He's got the skill set from the player perspective to know what it takes to win. Mm-hmm. But, hey, look, listen, the Pelicans, I think we're going to be a four-seed or higher. I really think if we stay healthy, we're going to do that. We're ascending now. You kind of feel that.
Yep.
It's really sad that the upper deck at the smooth. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, no, I hear you, man.
Hey, one final thing. UNO game tonight against Will Wade. Everybody in the city, whether you want to boo Will Wade, if you're an LSU fan or you're a UNO alumni, come out. Come support UNO. UNO's a dying university. Like Scott Chef, Chef Scotty says, come out here 7:30 tonight, Gentilly tonight, to come see Will Wade, because he's about to bolt for a bigger job. It's going to be a fun game. McNeese is probably going to smoke UNO, but still, it's going to be a fun game. Come on out, Gus. You might have a hall pass from your wife. I don't know.
maybe not so much, but I would like to see you Friday at Reds, Sunday over at the Yacht Club, where you can watch Jim Eichenhofer do body shots in the patio back there. Jim, what you got, buddy? How are you?
How's it going, Gus? Man, you keep promising these body shots. At some point, I'm going to have to deliver if you're going to keep telling
I don't think people realize how wild you really are. I mean, it is you're an absolute maniac when you actually are allowed out of the office here. Looking forward to seeing you over at the Mid-City Yacht Club on Sunday. We'll be at Reds watch party. I got goodies. You saw the goodies. I thought they were bringing us like a bag. You know, like two shirts, here's some leftover koozies with some dust on it. We got three big old boxes in that office, dude. We got stuff to give away. I'm going to give it all away at one time, but because I can't. I mean, it's like 250 shirts, man. We got stuff. So if you want Pell's gear, we will have it for you on Friday and Sunday. I'm so excited about it.
You know, I'm actually sitting right now in the studio where we recorded where all those boxes were.
Yeah.
And I was disappointed when I came back in here to see that all of the boxes were gone, because I was going to sneak my way into maybe a shirt or a koozie or two.
Well, I did stack them. I got it a little more neat, you know, and things of nature. I might bring one or two to Katie's tomorrow. Never know. But look, we talked a lot about on a podcast today about the game yesterday, and I love what you did today. You wanted to do something with JD, the Graf, and us about like looking at the rest of the season through March Madness eyes. So we're going to go through that after you give me your 30-second take on what you saw last night.
It was another example of that the Pelicans have something off the bench in a sixth man in Trey Murphy that I don't know how many teams in the NBA have, where you can bring him in and he can make 10 threes in a game. How many teams across the league have a guy that can score 30 points off the bench? Maybe they might do it once or twice a season, but, I mean, he's capable of doing that pretty regularly. He's had three really good games already out of the last four and a bunch since the All-Star break. So that was my biggest takeaway, and I think maybe the most positive development is just the fact that after he had a long stretch where he was not shooting the ball well and very uncharacteristically so for him, he's been pretty red hot lately, and just, you know, he just gives them a weapon that makes them so much more dangerous, whether it's over the rest of the regular season or, you know, hopefully when they get into the playoffs.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing what takes place, obviously, and there's so many numbers, 12 games above 500, biggest loss in franchise history for the Raptors. I mean, you know, just on and on and on, man. When I wrote down all those things you guys were talking about, too. No starters over 20 points. Trey Murphy, 25, 31, 31, 28, and 29 minutes. Those are close to starter numbers. Why is that important for this team?
Yeah, I mean, to be able to rely on somebody like that minutes-wise, I mean, we all know they just went through a stretch, for example, where they played six games in nine nights and five games in seven coming right out of the All-Star break. So fortunately right now they're getting a pretty good breather as far as not that many games and a bunch of days off where they can watch the scoreboard and root for other teams to lose that they're in the race with. But, I mean, a cumulative effect over the course of the season is it's really good to have guys you have coming off the bench that you can play a lot of minutes so that you can keep your starters' minutes manageable. I think there's some teams in the league, including the West, when they look down their bench, they don't see a lot of good options. So as time goes on, you're pressing some of your main guys into playing 40 minutes. And I mean, especially in the playoffs, some of the workload that some of these guys have is really big and a little bit unmanageable if you don't have any depth. I think that's a big value that Trey provides, is that you know you can play him as many minutes as you mentioned recently, and he's going to be as productive as he's been, where he's helping you in a big way win a bunch of these games lately.
All right, let's get into it. March Madness eyes over the final 20 games. It's hard to believe there's only got that many left. One shining moment, sir. Give me a non-star Pelicans player who will most take the spotlight this month.
Yeah, I narrowed that down to a few different guys, but I ended up ultimately saying that it was Trey Murphy. I actually was surprised that the other gentleman on our podcast roundtable didn't immediately go with him, but maybe they were thinking, you know, I want to be creative and I want to come up with something a little bit more outside the box, which I genuinely appreciate. But I think Trey and Herb Jones are going to be guys that during the month of March or over the course of the rest of the regular season, which stretches into mid-April, they're going to be players that media across the league and other teams, fans, take a look at these two guys and say, man, this guy's a better player than I thought. Look at the impact that he's making for a team that has a really good chance right now to be a top six seed. And I think as we get closer towards the end of the regular season, if they're able to cement a playoff berth, I think a lot of players on this team are going to start to get more recognition for what they contribute to the team. But as far as guys that maybe not everyone across the country knows, I think Trey Murphy might be the guy that benefits the most from the Pelicans closing out this regular season strong and hopefully avoiding the play-in tournament and be able to have a nice little break before they head into a first-round playoff series.
Yeah. Jose and Larry got some mentions from the other two guys, meaning John DeShazer and Ty Graffinina here as well. Give me a Cinderella March opponent the Pelicans will play that currently is under 500 but is the most dangerous, perhaps.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, if you look at it on paper, there aren't that many games, especially in March, that they have that are against teams that are under 500. But I picked Sunday's game against the Hawks because I feel like even though they don't have Trae Young right now, they've won three out of the five games that they've played since he's been out. And the two losses they had were both on the road at Brooklyn, a team that's doing everything I think they can not right now to try to stay scratch and claw and remain in the play-in tournament race. So the Hawks were my pick, but I also understood the people who said Brooklyn as far as a team that the Pelicans play the rest of this month that's under 500, that's dangerous. I think besides that, they only have a couple other games against teams that are under 500 during the stretch, including Detroit is one of the teams that they play on an East Coast road trip that they have coming up in about 2 weeks from now.
I love the last one you gave us. NIL, which visitor to the SKC in the rest of March you'd pay your own money to see? Like, you can't wait to go.
Yeah, I think the consensus choice for this, not surprisingly, was the Boston Celtics, the fact that they have the best record in the league right now by a wide margin. They're playing so extremely dominant basketball, the fact that they beat Golden State by 52 points on Sunday, and that was actually their third win this season by 50 or more. The fact that they have Drew Holiday, who's also, you know, still a favorite as far as among New Orleans fans. But it's interesting because there are a bunch of other marquee games this month. They also have a game against Milwaukee here. They played the Clippers and Oklahoma City, which are two teams that they had lost to in the only other matchups between the Clippers, Thunder, and Pelicans here in the blender. So there's a bunch of different options, but I definitely understand why probably most people would say Boston is the team that they will pay their hard-earned money to go see in the Smoothie King Center, because I think that's going to be a fun one. It's also a Saturday afternoon game, which is kind of a unique tip-off that I think a lot of families will enjoy going to the game for that one.
Yeah, no doubt. Bracketology. Among realistic possibilities, you have to pick a Western Conference first-round matchup you most want to see that does not involve the Pels. See, you and I were talking about this. Like, I look at it as I want a team that gets canceled out, right? So, like, I think the Clippers and I think the Suns are dangerous when Booker's healthy. I want them to play together. I think as a fan, I'd like to see T-Wolves and Thunder. And then you just got physical over here. Who did you like?
Yeah, I looked at it from the perspective of, as a fan, what would be the most interesting. I went with Golden State versus Minnesota, which is actually a pretty possible scenario where they play as, you know, Minnesota's one seed right now. Golden State will be trying to get in as an eight seed potentially. But the fact that they had a couple incidents during one of their recent games where Draymond Green put Rudy Gobert in a chokehold and somehow, for some reason, continued to keep that chokehold as he dragged him across the court. I just feel like those teams really dislike each other, and I feel like that series will be interesting from not just the intensity and hatred standpoint, but you have the Golden State Warriors who've won four championships, and you have Minnesota who's in this kind of small collection of teams along with Oklahoma City that are trying to prove that on the playoff stage they're ready to be successful in advance. So I feel like that would just be a fascinating thing to watch Minnesota play Golden State in the first round.
And finally, the last one is underseeded. Which Western Conference team, currently 1 through 10, would you say is better than its current seed? I said Lakers at 9, but, man, I think the one you came up with probably makes sense, too.
Yeah, that was funny, too, because we had, between the four of us, we had, I mean, we must have had 5 or 6 teams out of the top 10 listed, and obviously you're not going to say Minnesota because they're number 1, so that's impossible for them to be underseeded in OKC, so it is interesting. It just shows you how good the field is, that there's so many teams that you could say they're better than what seed they are right now. Yeah. But I went with Golden State because they're a 10 seed, and notwithstanding their 52-point loss to Boston, they've been playing really well. They won 7 out of their last 10 games. And I also went with the Denver Nuggets, who are a 3 seed right now. Similar to Golden State, since the All-Star break and since maybe the beginning or middle part of February, they've been one of the best teams in the league. They had a long winning streak that was ended last night. So they've been playing really good basketball, and I feel like it's one of those things where right now they're 3rd in the standings, and I feel like I'm sure there's a lot of teams in the West that are like, wait a minute, if they finish 3rd, we probably really don't want to finish 6th.
Yeah. So
that's why I say they're underseeded, because, yeah, they're technically 3rd. It's very close behind them in Minnesota and Oklahoma City. Yeah, they're 3rd, but it's like some teams would be like, I'd rather finish 8th and not play them than finish 6th and end up with a first-round date against the defending NBA champion.
That's Jim Eichenhofer, Jim_Eichenhofer. It's a way to give a follow on Pelicans.com. I honestly think I see you more than my wife now. But anyway, we'll talk again on Friday. If you want to hear the rest of that podcast, go to anywhere you get your podcast, the New Orleans Pelicans podcast, the Shazer, the Graph, myself, and Jim. We kind of go through a lot of that. It was a fun kind of exercise of using March Madness to go with what we see. Only 20 games remain, man. They're all huge in the Western Conference. Thanks so much, Jim. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Gus. I enjoy coming on. And once again, apologies to your wife for the imbalance of time spent with me versus her.
It's very true. I text you a lot more. Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you.
Yep. Tim Grubbs next on ESPN New Orleans.
Our baseball operations department, our research and development department, our leadership, but just going back to them, the commitment to it, the buying into just kind of building out the arsenal, from a starter standpoint.
The only problem when you have a guest, Tim Grubbs, at Mr. Tim Grubbs, the way to follow on Twitter, is the guest is sometimes speaking when plays happen. You just heard 3 strikeouts there from Paul Skeens, your Pittsburgh Pirate future legend. As I'm sure the play-by-play guy is probably going, give me 1 second. That's Paul Skeens, and he's striking people out. I'd like to be able to call that.
Yeah. We've all done play-by-play, and you just put, and we do these random guests, a lot of times corporate.
When the executive comes in or the AD, and
yeah, you would think an AD, usually when I'm doing a game with the marketing person from the team or the president or the general manager of the minor, they're sports people, so they know to lay off.
Okay.
But it's usually the sponsor that'll ramble. I had a game last year, we had a sponsor on, and just I missed an entire bat. Just never stopped.
We've all been there. We've all been there. We got to make it sound very exciting about the upcoming rubber ducky race to benefit something.
Yes.
2 innings pitched, 3 hits, 1 run, 3 strikeouts, and 0 walks for Paul Skeens. He's a Pittsburgh Pirate. Is this a Chris Bryant situation that he's starting in the minors this season?
I don't think so. Typically, Chris Bryant had already played multiple seasons of minor league baseball before they got to that point. So Paul Skeens has thrown 6 innings. Go back and look.
Seems like enough for me. It's enough for me.
He got drafted last year, and, obviously they babied him through the year, which I get it. You got to think about it. He already did a full college schedule that took a team all the way to the College World Series. So he threw a ton of innings. So the Pirates laid him back, and then he threw a few innings in single A, a few innings in double A, and a few innings in triple A. He threw 6 2/3 total innings. So there's a reason why. And I think my guess is if he starts in double A, which is probably where he'll start, and he does well in April, you know, Mother's Day or whatever, you see him in the big leagues. But if, you know, also if he gets, you know, he got roughed up in a game last year at Double A or Triple A, and you know, all it is a little blurb. That happens in the big leagues. It's national news, and you don't want to mess with someone's, some kid's head, you know, that, you know, in his psyche and all that sort of stuff. And it's not like the Pirates, or not like we're talking about a team like the Pirates, who, I mean, yeah, do they have a chance of maybe the extra wild card or anything like that, possibly, but they're not. This is a long-term project, right, and I don't think they're that worried about the games in April at this point.
And that's what I wanted to bring up, Tim, and that's why I wanted to bring you on here as well. We're going to be talking, obviously, now weekly about Major League Baseball, some of the storylines. The season doesn't start to the end of the month, but you get up to that season, and there's a build-up to it. You've called minor league baseball, Triple A, Double A. You've seen all the different levels of it. How big a jump is it? Look, we've seen guys play at LSU, win national championships, never get out of A or Double A ball. I mean, from, you know, Blair Barry, I mean, like a bunch of names and guys that we all know and stuff. It's hard to get to the major league level, isn't it, as a position player? But what about pitching, too? Is there an adjustment? Because I would just think, like, in my, you know, minuscule mind, can he throw strikes? Can he not? Can he get hitters? Can he get hitters out or not? But the Graf once told me, he's like, dude, you're not getting a fastball past a major league hitter. You're just not. You have to learn to pitch in order to be a major league pitcher because the hitting is that good. Is that the big gap between pitching at, say, LSU and the minor league levels and a major league baseball game?
It's a huge gap. And you'll hear it, everybody say, you know, you'll hear the myth, and I'll stress on the myth that the SEC is a double A level, and, you know, and it's probably not even low A. You know what I mean? It's not even close. Now, are the Friday night starters in the SEC caliber, you know, is it triple A and double A caliber at times? Yeah, they are, but there's also a big drop off, you know what I mean, with the Saturday starters and the Sunday starters and the position play, and they all have weaknesses and different things like that. And when you get into the real scouts and different things like that, there's a reason why, you know, you don't have guys go straight. There's very few players. Like Chris Bryant spent a couple years in the minor league. Strasburg spent a limited amount of time. He was he's probably the quickest from college to minor league baseball to the major leagues in the recent era. People don't really do it. Sometimes you'll see a guy, I think it was Brandon Finnegan about several years ago, pitched in the College World Series and the Major League World Series in the same year, but he was also a relief pitcher. You know what I mean? He wasn't also a guy that was going to be getting the brunt of 5-6 innings and stuff like that. So it's a pretty huge jump, as you pointed it out. And can it happen? Yeah. I mean, obviously, but you know, you take a look at last year's College World Series team for LSU. You know, 5 years from now, when you look at how many of those guys have played in the big leagues, it's going to be a lot lower of a number than I think people expect.
Yeah, I mean, in Florida, too, you got some outstanding pitchers, obviously, that are playing in that series. But, Tim, I bring that up because that was something I felt like we tried to sell a lot. We tried to explain a lot. And I don't know if sometimes people got a lot. And I think it's almost it's like the perfect storm in this aspect of it, right? It's kind of like the success almost kind of hinders the lack of other success. And what I mean by that is baseball in this state, you know this, Tim, from living here, it's huge. It's right below football. I would absolutely put it below football. High school ball, you know, Lee, I mean, how many games are played at Mike Molly all the time? I mean, and all that stuff. And then you have college ball. I mean, people follow college baseball here pretty good. And so then when you had the AAA level, I don't know if people realized, because we've seen so much winning and saw so many teams at the high school and collegiate level do well here, realize how good the minor league team actually was, even if they didn't win minor league championships. Like you and I would, I always felt like we always would push that. I'm like, no, guys, y'all don't understand. Like, the LSU top player, he hadn't even got to AAA yet. You know, it's like those guys are one phone call away. My most famous story of all was seeing Chris Bryant's last at-bat at Zephyr Field, hits a home run. The next morning, a 6:30 a.m. Southwest flight, someone took a photo at the airport, and he's playing at 1:30 in Wrigley. Like, that's the jump. It's a phone call away.
It really is. You know, I was on that flight.
It might have been you that sent me the picture.
He sat in the row in front of me. He sat in the window seat in front of me.
Incredible.
I was actually surprised he was on the flight, but it was a direct flight New Orleans to Chicago. I was going New Orleans to Omaha to do the game that night, but he just got off the plane and played at Wrigley that
literally
day. He was in the lineup.
Yeah, he went like 0-for-4. It was terrible. But to your point, though, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I don't think people realize you literally are that good. Like, if you're just talking about the jump that it takes to play in the majors, then how good must you be where someone picks up the phone and says, hey, get an Uber to the airport. You're playing that night. You're playing the next day. Like, that's how good you really are. That's how good this team was when you had Zephyr players here.
Absolutely. No, it's a huge leap. And obviously, I think we talk about it a lot. You know, we're all football fans, and we talk about it a lot with the NFL. You never know, you know, which one of these quarterbacks, you know, how good you were at Alabama, or how good you were at Ohio State, how good you are to actually be great, especially as a rookie. I mean, what C.J. Stroud did this year is incredible.
Joke. Yeah, it doesn't
what
happen.
What Bryce Young did is more what you expect. That doesn't mean he's a bust. It just means that's just the way it is. And I think that's the one thing we got to remember with Paul Skeens here is that, you know, you got to slow down the train. You got to bust the psyche. You know, like I said before, if he goes there and gets roughed up, it's going to be tough to get him back on track. So it's better to have him go to AA or AAA and have some success, work on a few things, especially with the way scouting reports are now, that these guys know they're not going to chase after anything out of the zone. You know, and that's the thing that these guys really have to pay attention of. And I'm sure that's why the Pirates, they invested. I don't remember what a signing bonus is now, but I remember it was a healthy amount of money, that's for sure.
Yeah. And look, believe me, I think it's funny here because the contrast is you're a Pirates fan. You can't wait. I'm a Cubs fan. He can stay there forever for all I care. You know, so, I mean, that's the beauty of it. But we're both fans of him because we're Tiger fans as well. So, and we saw the success that he has. And it is just crazy to see somebody that is like that, you know.
That's funny because Strasburg got called up, I don't remember what year it was, 10 years ago or whatever, and I remember his debut was against the Pirates. And I was thinking, he's against the Pirates, as bad as they were at the time, and they were worse than they are now. I'm like, he's going to not do well, and he sucked. I mean, they timed it perfect, and I remember being like, oh, wow, this guy's really that good. And I hope for the same. I hope for the same type of trajectory for him, and hopefully he's the the guy that puts the Pirates back on the map.
Well, let me tell you something. I said it today, and I know Dad's listening, and please don't judge me. But 1998, May 6th, I mean, the semester was over. I skipped class. Kerry Wood took the field at Wrigley Field for his debut. And I'll never forget it. It was unbelievable, you know? I mean, he was awesome. I mean, he had strikeouts. He had everything. It was incredible. I remember watching, you know, all those pitches and do what he did. So, yeah, I mean, I remember he was supposed to say we went through a lot of saviors in Chicago until we actually finally got one with Chris Bryant that kind of helped to, you know, start that team, which is kind of still one of the coolest things ever, Tim, and that's why I miss minor league ball here. I saw a guy that was hyped that he did show up and help start what I never thought I'd see. The Cubs win a World Series, and it was down the street from my house, man. Like, I really wish we still had that.
Yeah, no, it was great. And, you know, I remember 02, Mark Pryor. You know, Kerry Wood was healthy at this point for the Cubs. Mark Pryor pitched for the Iowa Cubs at Zephyr Field, and Pryor dealt. It was his last AAA start. And I remember thinking at the time, as much as I wasn't a Cubs fan, they got Kerry Wood and this guy coming. Cubs are going to win a World Series.
Yep.
Now, little did I know that those guys would both have arm injuries. They wouldn't have anything to do with it. But
no, I know. And I give you credit because you told me well before Chris Bryant came up, you're like, dude, Iowa's pretty good. You guys have some guys coming up. And sure enough, the shortstop, the second baseman, all those guys. So this is why we have you on, man, because we're going to follow it throughout the season. At Mr. Tim Grubbs is the way to follow now, the voice of the Wind Surge over there in Wichita. He's coming in 2 weekends. If you want to have a beer with Tim Grubbs, he's going to be coming for the St. Paddy's Day Parade. I can't wait to see you and the fam, man. Looking forward to talking to you
soon. Looking forward to it, man.
Yep, for sure. If you remember any of it, that'll be a good trip. We'll come back. Final segment next on ESPN New Orleans.
What'd you say?
You do hear.
Sports voice.
All day long.
Hello, sports fans.
Now back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengau.
Final segment. Only say that because I'm looking outside the window and I cannot wait to get into carpool. Honestly. Get the drive up. Open the sunroof, windows down, bring the mini schnauzer around, have a little fun and just enjoy before it just gets... I'm telling you, I'm not a fan of the heat. I'm already starting to see it like the next 2 weeks, 70s, 80s. I'm like, oh, that nine's coming at any minute. I know it. In the meantime, though, we'll have some fun. Last night, Pelicans locker room. Coach Willie Green walked in, and let's see. That's what he had to say.
Great job, guys. Yep. Hey, wait. The big thing for us is starting to trip off right and playing to our standards. And everybody that touched the floor tonight did that. Super proud of you guys. Good start to a road trip. And game ball, Larry, go ahead. Those two brought.
Yes.
I love that. I love the way the team kind of started to focus. And again, I think you're seeing the maturation process right before your eyes. Honestly, legit. I'm excited to kind of see what happens here in the final 20 games. Because again, no matter how many times you win these games like this, you still don't have a big lead, you know, from where you are as you take a look at the standings and everything. But I love what Coach said yesterday afterwards to a reporter as to what the challenge now is with 20 left.
The challenge for us is always looking ourselves in the mirror and going out with the mentality that we want to be dominant every game. We want to execute. We want to execute on both ends of the floor. And every game we should have an opportunity to win. Period. And that's going to be the challenge going down the stretch. It's going to be, as you guys can see, some of these games are going to be exciting. There's teams fighting for positioning, and we're one of them. So each game that we play, we're going to have to have a mentality that we want to execute on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that hopefully this team just, you know, will continue to do it. And again, I see it. You can hear it when players talk about other players on the team. I think people like other players having success. And more importantly, I love what I hear from some of the players that, you know, are the faces, the stars, the guys that do sell the jerseys, you know, more than anything else. Again, I go back to how Zion describes Herb Jones.
I'm not going to go into too much details because I know how he is, but, man, Herb is a good dude. And he's somebody that when you're on the court with him, you look like I want to go to war with him. If I'm in war, like, I want him on my side. And he not only shows it, like, each game, but he shows it every day in practice. Like, every time you interact with him, he's just a good dude. I'm not going into too much details because I know how he is, but if I'm in war, I want him on my side.
Gotta love that. Trey Murphy on Herb Jones.
One of the best human beings that you'll ever meet. He is super selfless. A lot of times I feel like he's a little too selfless. I think he needs to promote himself just a little bit more. Still working on that, but he's super humble and just one of the guys you just want to root for. And super down to earth and one of my best friends. So I think everything that he has gotten and will get is what he deserves. So, you know, I just think the world of Herb Jones.
Look, I don't know if there's an analytic number or correlation. I'm sure if you ask, you know, players, coaches, and I'll probably bring this up the next time I speak with Antonio Daniels. Again, I'm trying to get him and Will Guillory together to talk about college basketball here before March Madness and things of nature. But I do think when you have a team that's that together and close, that legit doesn't have animosity, that legit wants to see their teammates succeed. And I do believe that with Zion. I do. Like, Graf would tell me. I don't know if I'd pass it along, but I don't get that sense where there's ill will towards another player on their team, if that makes sense. And what I mean that is, if you've ever played sports, when you have that, you fight a little harder. Like, it matters more. It cares a little bit more. Let's see what it translates to in the final 20 games. Matt Moscone after further review is next. We'll see you tomorrow at Katie's over in Mid-City on the Sports Hangover on ESPN New Orleans.